Hi, I'm Tracy Brosman, co-founder of World Wellness Education, a community forum to educate, encourage, and inspire a better way of life. We commonly face day-to-day challenges of stress, lack of exercise, and poor eating habits. But with the right approach, we can find freedom, wake up each morning feeling healthy, focused, and ready to take on the day. Together, we can make a difference, one story at a time. Over 4.5 million people in America have some form of kidney disease. Renal cell carcinoma is the most common type of kidney cancer, and it is responsible for close to 13,000 deaths in 2009. Our guest today is Dr. Claudia Thomas. She will share her struggle with this disease. Welcome, Dr. Thomas. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Let's start with telling the audience what type of doctor you are.
I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and for those who get that confused with all sorts of other types of surgery,
yes,
orthopedic surgery is treatment of the entire musculoskeletal system with the exception of the head.
Okay.
So any injury to muscles, bones, tendons, or joints from the neck down is taken care of by an orthopedic surgeon.
Wonderful, thank you. Now, what made you decide to study orthopedics?
This is a long story. To make it short, I never really decided to become a physician. I went to college as a math major and became disillusioned with math late in my junior year. At that time, I made a very unlikely transition to medicine, and it wasn't until I got to medical school that I decided that I would prefer surgery because of the use of the hands and the need for manual dexterity, which I've been gifted with. And when I noticed that orthopedic surgery resembled the carpentry that my father had taught me as a child and the solid geometry that I had loved in high school, I decided
that was the field. Does have another place.
Geometry has a place. And it resembled the things that I loved and things that I had been talented at. And so that's how I chose orthopedic surgery.
Wonderful. Well, when you spoke at a World Wellness Education meeting, you had mentioned that you were the first African-American woman to become an orthopedic surgeon. That designation must have felt incredible.
I didn't realize that until after I had finished.
Really?
When I chose orthopedic surgery, I knew that there were very few women in the country doing this.
Right.
And I spoke to my chief resident with some concern to advise me if I should take this path because I didn't see many women doing it. And he said, there's no reason you can't do that. That was all the encouragement I needed.
Yes.
But at every program I applied to and looked at, I would have been the first woman they trained.
Oh, really?
It wasn't until after I finished that I realized I was the first African-American woman in the country to become an orthopedic surgeon. And at that point, I decided I would not be the last.
Definitely not, and I'm sure you haven't been. Was it a difficult journey, though?
It was a very difficult journey. I will say that even today, there are men in the surgical field who feel there is no place for women. And this was even more true when I came through my training in the 1970s. I actually had some people laugh at me when I told them that I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon.
Oh, really?
Oh, you're not strong enough. Oh, you're a woman. You can't do that. And that made me even more determined. Yeah. But there was a great deal of sexism, and there still is in the specialty, not only in the operating room, but in the locker room, in the designation of male and female lockers, and just in surgery in general, on the floor during rounds. And there are things that my male colleagues were exposed to that I was not because of gender bias.
Well, that's sad that that's still the case, but I'm sure you've gone a long way to making that different for women of the younger generations.
I've done my best to make changes.
Now, how large of a factor do you think stress is in creating disease?
Stress is a huge factor in creating disease. And this is one of the reasons that we see a larger incidence of diseases such as diabetes and hypertension in poor people.
Okay.
In or people who are considered so-called lower class, but people who are deprived economically tend to be sicker.
Because they have to stress over their financial means.
Yes, they have a lot of stress in their lives, and probably the most stressed out group of people in this country are the Native Americans. The highest incidence of diseases is found in that group of people, and they are certainly, no pun intended, on the low end of the totem pole.
Right.
When it comes to finances and standard of living in this country.
Sad. When did you decide that, or when did you see that you were having health problems yourself?
I finished my residency in orthopedics. It was 5 years of training. And I also did a fellowship in trauma, which was very stressful. And at the middle of my trauma fellowship, I decided to apply for insurance. And protein was found in my urine on the screening for the insurance. In fact, it was recommended that I not apply for additional insurance because I probably would be turned down on the basis of that finding. I was also found to have high blood pressure. These were things that I didn't feel, that I wasn't aware of. I didn't feel any differently. I didn't have any pain. I wasn't any more fatigued. But there was a beginning of abnormality that was picked up on these few tests that I had that indicated bad things to come.
And were you able to go to see the doctor then at that point, and did they diagnose you?
I was advised to see someone. Of course, physicians are the worst patients, and so I didn't pay any attention to this until some years later.
And what is physiological proteinuria?
Physiological proteinuria is the presence of protein in the urine.
Okay.
And this is done through simple testing of a urine specimen. A little stick is put in there, and if one of the pads turns dark green, that detects the presence of protein. Normally, there should be no protein in the urine. The urine should filter protein so that it stays in your circulation and does not come out through the urine.
Okay.
So the fact that it leaks out into your urine means something is going on. And when the doctors can't find a cause for that, they say it's physiological. In other words, we don't know why it's happening. It's just you.
It's just there.
Yes. But I would say that in most of these cases, it will declare itself. The pathology that exists will declare itself somewhere down the line.
Now, when you found this out, did you take any medications or did you have to watch your diet?
I had to watch my diet. I had to limit my salt because of the high blood pressure.
Okay.
And I was advised to limit my protein intake.
Okay. And I read your autobiography, God's Spare Life, and I see you have a copy of that. And in your autobiography, I know that you lived on St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands. What did you do for your practice there? Did you practice?
I married and moved to St. Thomas, where I went into solo private practice.
All right.
I mean, I had no fear. When I think back on this, you know, this is a huge move.
Yes.
But here I am ready to run a business with no business background, which is what you do when you're in private practice. So I went into solo private practice. My husband did help me. He was a businessman and a real estate developer. And I started seeing patients, you know, hung out my shingle and did well and loved it. I loved the people and I loved the island. St. Thomas is beautiful.
Now, were you still getting tests done on your kidneys at that point?
I occasionally got some testing. I would go to the lab and get testing. My urine became more and more frothy. It started to look like beer with a head on it. And so this meant I was spilling more and more protein into my urine. And when I saw that, I would occasionally check my blood work to see if I was okay in terms of my kidney function.
And did you see another doctor on the island, or you just did the test yourself?
I did the test myself 1 year, and I don't recall which year, but after I'd been on the island for a couple of years, a conference was held on St. Thomas, and a speaker was a nephrologist who was very much into kidney problems in the African-American community. And he became my doctor.
Oh, okay.
I approached him and asked him if he would follow me. So he started to follow my lab work.
Oh, well, that's good that you had somebody there.
He was actually from the University of Maryland.
Okay.
But I would send him my results, and we would talk on the phone, and he would follow me in that fashion.
Now, I know you were on St. Thomas during Hurricane Hugo.
Yes, I was.
That must have been a terrifying experience.
Hurricane Hugo was the most terrifying and stressful experience of my life, even to date. And I've been through some things in my life.
Yes, you have.
The thing that made it so stressful was really believing that we were going to die. The winds were so fierce at 250 miles an hour.
250
miles an hour peak. At that point, the wind meter broke, so we don't know how high the winds got. But this was a Category 5 hurricane.
And where were you at during the hurricane?
I was holed up in my house.
Oh, my.
On an island that was 12 miles long and 4 miles wide. There was no such thing as evacuation. Now, my husband happened to be the builder.
Okay.
And so it was time to see if he was as good as I thought he was, because I couldn't imagine how this 20-foot ceiling of this cathedral ceiling of the roof would stay on with the winds as fierce as they sounded. There was a 9-foot overhang on the patio, and I had visions of that wind just ripping the roof right off.
I can imagine that.
In fact, it was night, and we couldn't see, but we could hear the sounds of people's roofs flying in the wind.
Oh, no.
Most of the roofs had a galvanized tin-type covering on them, and we heard people's houses ripping apart. And that tin just whipping through the air like a giant razor blade.
Oh, my.
And so my thought was, we're going to be next. And I couldn't imagine surviving those winds when the roof went. I imagine we'd be sucked right out.
So how long was the hurricane over you? How many hours?
The hurricane lasted a good 14 hours.
Oh, that must have been terrifying.
It was terrifying.
So when it finished, was your house okay?
Our house survived it.
Well, that's
good. Our house survived it. And we survived. And at one point, I thought that I was going to be a goner. Now, I'm a very strong person. I've gone into boundaries that have not been explored before. I've been the first to do things.
Right.
But this terror of this storm had me on my knees. The only calm that I could get to overcome the panic
right.
that was taking over my body and my mind was to start reciting the 23rd Psalm. And that calmed me down, and that got me through the storm more than anything else.
So you just repeated that all night?
I just repeated the 23rd Psalm. Every time I felt my pulse rise and my heart thump.
Right, because you were fighting high blood pressure at the time.
Yes, I was.
Oh, my. So when the hurricane was over, what was the rest of the island like? Was it awful?
I have a passage in my autobiography that describes that
yes.
better than I can right now, and I will briefly read that.
Please.
My familiar world of lush, dense, tropical vegetation was gone. Nothing green remained. The countryside had been mercilessly pruned of its foliage. The trees that had survived were stripped of branches. The grass was burned brown by briny winds. Houses were strewn everywhere, now simply large pieces of debris. All that remained of some homes were concrete slabs. Overnight, our world had been transformed into a post-Holocaustic landscape. There was an eerie desolation with no sign of life on the mountainside.
What a way to wake up, but then thankful that you were alive.
God spared life.
Yes, and that's the title of your book?
That's the title of my book. It's a West Indian expression that I learned on St. Thomas.
What's it mean?
Where people say, it's like God willing.
Okay.
People say, see you tomorrow, God spare life. In other words, if God spares life. The island was destroyed, homes were destroyed, but God spared life. No one lost their life.
No one died.
Correct.
That's incredible. That's really incredible. Now, did you have any phone coverage while you were during the hurricane or afterwards?
Phone service went out the morning of the storm.
Okay.
I had spoken to my mother the day before, that Saturday. I had spoken to her, and the storm hadn't gotten there yet, and I told her we were all right and we were going to be boarded up, we would be fine.
Right.
But there was no communication with St. Thomas after that storm hit.
So no way to get out to the rest of the world that you were okay?
No. But I'll tell you a miracle.
What's that?
The storm hit on a Sunday night. My mother was in New York, and she told me that she just kept picking up the phone and listening, and she didn't know, you know, God knows what, and that takes literal meaning. God knows what she was listening for, but she kept picking up the phone and listening after the storm. She couldn't get any news, and Tuesday, the storm hit on Sunday, Tuesday, I decided to pick up my phone and see if we had a dial tone. And she picked up her phone at the same time. She was on the other end of the phone. No one had dialed a number.
Neither one of you had dialed each other.
And she was on the other end of the phone. That is a miracle.
Yes, it is.
And I started crying like a baby. Then I told her we were fine, but the island was destroyed.
Oh.
We talked for a couple of hours. I didn't get phone service back for another 2 months.
Wow, so you never had phone service, but you were able to talk to your mom?
Yes.
Well, thank God, because she needed to know you were okay.
Yes.
And you needed to talk to her, I'm sure. Now, how did the stress of the hurricane affect your health?
After Hurricane Hugo, I started losing a lot of weight. I had more protein visible in my urine as of the frothiness of it.
Right.
And I started feeling ill. I took my laboratory tests again, and my BUN and creatinine, BUN stands for blood urea nitrogen,
okay,
and creatinine, those levels were elevated. These are poisons that the kidney normally removes, but it wasn't doing a good job of removing them in me, and these are the signs of kidney failure.
Oh boy. So what did you do next?
Those numbers were elevated. I called my nephrologist at University of Maryland.
Right.
And this was, of course, a couple of months afterwards, after we had gotten phone service back. And I called the nephrologist, and he told me, Claudia, with those numbers, you need to either start dialysis or get a transplant. I was in kidney failure.
Wow. So neither one are good options. What did you do?
I called my sister. I didn't want to upset my mother. And I called my sister to share the news with her. She was familiar with kidney transplantation.
Mm-hmm.
A lady in her church had had a kidney transplant. And she said, I understand that a living-related donor transplant is superior to a cadaver transplant. I have two kidneys. You can have one of mine.
Oh, just like that?
Just like that.
Wow, what a great sister. So did you come back to the States then?
Yes, I did. I came back to the States to get a transplant.
And how did that surgery go?
Well, the night before surgery, our surgeon named Dr. Light,
mm-hmm,
and I feel that's no coincidence, walked into the room that my sister and I were in, and my mother was there. And we were supposed to have the transplant the following day. He said there was a spot on one of my kidneys on a scan that had a 99% chance of being nothing but a cyst.
Okay.
But he wasn't willing to take that 1% chance that it could have been something serious like a cancer. The spot had gotten larger since the prior scan, and he recommended that prior to taking my sister's kidney out of her body for transplant, he remove my kidney with an open biopsy and see what that spot was. You see, ordinarily with kidney transplantation, your natural kidneys stay in your body, and the new kidney is put in your lower abdomen. I didn't even know that as a surgeon. But your kidneys usually stay there, and the procedure is a simple one of putting the new kidney in your belly and hooking it up to the blood vessels and to the ureter. But he was proposing a much bigger operation for removal of a kidney to see what that spot was.
And what was the spot?
Well, at that time, my mother, who was in the room with us, told him, you know, this is God's will. You do what you have to do, but don't forget you're only God's instrument. She told it to Dr. Light, who then blushed.
Yeah.
She was reminding him. The following day, my sister and I went to surgery. My sister stayed in the room.
Okay.
Until we knew what was going on with my kidney. I woke up in recovery with Dr. Light telling me, Claudia, you had cancer in both your kidneys.
Wow.
We had to remove your kidneys. We will not give you a transplant because we don't know if that cancer has spread.
Oh.
You'll have to go on dialysis. And from somewhere, my response came by faith. My response, even though it was groggy from anesthesia,
right,
was thank God. Praise God. I had cancer. He took it out. I declared myself as healed. And I knew that the cancer wasn't coming back.
You know, that's amazing right there, because so many people would not hear that they had cancer. They would just hear that they have cancer.
To me, God lent him to do that biopsy in order to cure me, because that was an option. He didn't have to go looking for this cyst and see what it was. But God directed him because that was a cure.
Wow, incredible. So you had both your kidneys removed, and
yes,
you had
I did.
To go on dialysis.
Yes, I did.
And how was that? Because I know
that's
that
when
did.
The misery began.
Oh, no.
I was very, very sick on dialysis. I was fluid overloaded. I remember after Christmas dinner, with the holidays approaching. I had a little indiscretion in my diet. I was on a type of dialysis that was done through my belly, mm-hmm. called peritoneal dialysis. And a little bit too much salt, a little bit too much this, that, and the other, and I was 30 pounds overloaded in weight. I was in congestive heart failure. When I stood up, I could feel the fluid moving down into my legs by gravity. When I laid down, it moved into my lungs and nearly choked me. And so I had to go back in the hospital and have 30 pounds of fluid taken off my body through aggressive dialysis.
Wow.
I had another episode where I had an indiscretion with potatoes, those Western fries that they serve in Baltimore that are delicious. A little extra potato and a little extra orange juice over a weekend sent me into a state where my potassium level was very elevated. Orange juice and potatoes are rich in potassium. Potassium will short-circuit your muscles, including your heart. A normal potassium is 4. My potassium was 8.2.
Oh my
gosh. When I came in the emergency room, unable to stand because my muscles were too weak, and in heart block, where my heart was not really making a rhythm.
Oh, Dr. Thomas.
It was shorted out. And I was sitting there looking fine, talking to people, but I was in heart block.
Right.
Had to be resuscitated. Awake and alert.
And had to be resuscitated. Now, in the book, you discuss Daisy's watch.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
The most critical problem I had during dialysis was a grand mal seizure from too much fluid in my body, which caused my blood pressure to go up and caused bleeding in my brain.
Oh, gosh.
And I had a grand mal seizure, was taken to the hospital, and the doctors told my mother I had brain damage. My mother is Daisy.
Right.
And they said, speaking of me, your daughter will not be the same. There's a big bleed in her brain. They had done a CAT scan. It was a big area of bleeding. My mother prayed audibly on her knees for the 4 days I was hospitalized in a comatose state. When she wasn't praying, she was doing my dialysis through my belly because it was a very new type of dialysis and not everyone knew how to do. But she had watched me and gone through the lessons with me, and she, not the nurses, was doing my dialysis to keep me alive. My mother did not pay any attention to herself. She did not take the rollers out of her hair. And she's a very vain lady. She's a pretty woman who likes to look good, but she was taking care of her child and keeping me alive. That was Daisy's watch. And that chapter is in my book several times, developing the situation each time. Each time a little bit further.
Well, you don't appear to have brain damage.
No, I don't. And it was prayer and anointment that actually woke me up, and you have to really read it in my book.
It's very fascinating.
I woke up and I was completely lucid. I knew I had lost time.
Right.
But I said, what happened? And after I shouted to the nurses, I have to go to the bathroom. The brain scan was repeated, and the spot was gone.
Wow. That's incredible. And did you end up getting the kidney transplant from your sister?
Yes, I did. September 30th, 1991, my sister gave me her kidney, and we've done well ever since.
Wonderful. Well, I'm so glad that you're doing well now.
Thank you.
And if people would like to get in contact with you or get a copy of your book, how would they go about doing that?
They can contact me at God Spare Life. It's the same as the title of my book.
Okay.
GodSpareLife@gmail.com. Or they can get my book through the publisher.
Okay.
WME Books.
WME Books.
Yes, WME Books. And Amazon.com also has a few copies.
Oh, great. And can they read? Are you practicing here in Leesburg?
Yes, I am.
And so how can they get in contact with you there?
I'm at Tri-County Orthopedic Center.
Okay.
And we have offices in Leesburg and in the Villages.
Wonderful.
So they can find us at Medical Plaza Drive in Leesburg or at the Summit
in the
Villages in Lady Lake.
Well, thank you, Dr. Claudia Thomas, for joining us. Together, we can make a difference, one story at a time. Do you remember playing with your friends as a child? Waking up in the morning and the first thing that you thought about was getting out and playing with your friends? Riding a bike, playing ball, playing house, or pretending to be cops and robbers?
As children, we so look forward to being active, keeping our bodies moving, and feeling great. Remember those days on our bicycles? We would ride those bikes all day, just gently for a period, but then, of course, the race would be on. Someone would issue a challenge, and you were working as hard as you could to beat that challenge. I bet I can beat you to the water tower. Or, I bet I can ride my bike farther without hands. How about, I bet I can coast down the hill farther than you can. And what happened to those days in moving our bodies? Why don't we get that excited in our older years? I have a theory. Someone tells us it's exercise. And exercise is good for us. We need to exercise every day. And our brains say, yuck. I want to do stuff that is fun, free, and easy. I want to do things that make me smile and make my heart sing. I don't want to do anything that is good for me. So the question I have for you today is, how can we turn exercise back into play? How can we realize all of the benefits of being active without using the word exercise? Can we eliminate statements like, I'm going to go work out? Notice the word work in that statement. Let's look at exercise from the play side of life again. The first thing that you want to do is look at what you love to do. For each of us, that is going to be different. But let's look at a couple of examples. Let's say music really moves your soul. When you hear uplifting music, it just makes your body want to move. I know many people who fall into this category. Instead of adding exercise to your life, let's add more music. Most people who love music actually move more while they are listening to it. This could lead to dancing, walking, running, and even aerobics. If you are someone who loves music, you know that turning on the right music might even turn house cleaning into a good workout. Now, if you suggested to a friend that they add more music to their life, they will probably agree. You won't get the excuses that you do when you suggest that they exercise more. The theory here is that you do more of what you love, with the thought that moving your body feels good. Before you know it, you will be in good shape. Just experiment. Take a walk without music. Then take a walk with music. What a difference! With music, it is more like playing. Without music, it is the dreaded word, exercise. What if you love to be out in nature? However, you are busy and have been trying to exercise using fitness equipment instead. Stop it! This is not playing, it's work. Instead, drive to a nearby park. Take the extra few minutes to be in an environment that makes your heart sing. The enjoyment of moving your body in this environment will be great. It will be like playing, not working. Think about the difference of walking on a treadmill or walking through nature. One is work and the other is play. Let's play more. I also think it is important that we work on the use of our language. What most of us say before our workout is, I have to go work out, or I have to exercise. Do these statements really motivate you? What if you said, I'm going to go play, or dance, or walk in nature? This change of wording can be a great way to have more fun moving your body. Remember, as children, we never said, I have to go play with the neighbor kids, or I need to go ride my bike. On that note, I think I'm going to go dance for a while. Thanks for joining us. Remember, you can catch the show each week on Lakefront TV and on Heartbeat Radio for Women at heartbeatradiousa.com. You can also find out more about World Wellness Education at www.worldwellnesseducation.org. We'll see you next time.